Sorry, we're a little late. The Habitat Committee was meeting, and we had some very important topics to take up during the Habitat Committee. So apologize for being a little late getting back here, but we've reached agenda item 7, Enforcement Program Staffing Study. This is a briefing. Chief Bjork and Deputy Chief Sensi are here, and this was in response to a blue sheet the commission adopted months ago. And it was my request. I feel that it's just important for the commission to hear this presentation periodically to just remind ourselves what the problem is that was addressed by the staffing study. So, Chief Bjork.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the commission. For the record, my name's Bruce Bjork, Chief of the Law Enforcement Program for Department of Fish and Wildlife. And with me is Mike Sensi, the Deputy Chief of the program. And we will provide a briefing on past staffing numbers, existing staffing numbers. We've got a budget component that we'll be discussing with you as we go away, some of our challenges, some exactly duties that a Fish and Wildlife officer does. And just to start off with, of course, you're all very familiar with our agency mission to preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish and wildlife and their ecosystems while they depend on and while providing sustainable fish and wildlife, recreational, and commercial opportunities. And like the other programs, we have a program mission as well, and that is to serve the public by providing professional law enforcement services, protecting public safety and responding to emergency incidents, as well as building those partnerships within our communities. We have an authorizing environment that we work under as natural resource police officers, and that is to deal primarily with Title 77, which is the Fish and Wildlife Code, and all of the administrative codes that this commission adopts. We work obviously with Title 9 and Title 9A, which is the state's criminal code, general crimes, Title 10, which is all the criminal procedures, and our agency WACs, which are WAC 220 and 232, which, as you know, will be rolled into a single title when we get done with our WAC rewrite, all into 220. Fish and Wildlife police officers also enforce a number of laws pertaining to other criminal acts, boating safety, motor vehicles, vandalism. I mean, our police officers have general authority, so they can enforce every law there is within the state. Our officers, and you've heard me say this a number of times before, many of our officers carry county commissions. They do that so they're able to enforce county ordinance. So an example of that would be motor restrictions on boats in lakes within the county, some of those types of county ordinance violations. The same thing with cities. We do have one city commission, that's the city of Camas, and it's to deal primarily with migrating fish coming through town.
And then I might add that we have a number of other authorities. We have a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Law Enforcement Commission, as well as a law enforcement commission from NOAA to enforce federal natural resource laws, particularly where you have interstate connections. And we have a law enforcement agreement with the Oregon State Police that enables both entities to work within 50 miles of each other's borders under a number of parameters. But because of that border nexus, we share the bad guys, and this removes some barriers in order to pursue those folks.
Commissioner Smith?
Quick question, Mike. What about Canada? Is there any reciprocity there?
No.
However, we do jointly patrol the U.S.-Canada border. There have been a number of times where we've deployed officers on their patrol vessels and vice versa while we work that border country. It's a really great partnership that our North Sound Marine Detachment has developed with the Canadian authorities. And then there are a number of border operations at the land crossing stations throughout the year where both entities work very closely together.
So both with Department of Fisheries and Oceans with Canada, but then U.S. Border Patrol and U.S. Customs. We do a lot of joint patrols there, but there's no cross-commissioning. And it's the same way with tribal law enforcement. We do a lot of cross-boat patrols, cross-patrols, emphasis patrols, but there's no cross-commissioning. So just a little bit of look at what we do. Our primary function is promoting compliance with the natural resource laws, focused on really protecting all of our natural resources within the state. We provide professional law enforcement services. We have worked really hard over the years to bring our standards and professionalism up to the level of a professional law enforcement entity, and I believe we've done a really good job at that. We've tried real hard to improve public perception, help our public understand the importance of natural resource policing, the protection through enhanced outreach and education. You've seen our turn in a poacher trailer. We've had it demoed out here in the side. We present that at fairs and exhibition halls and have officers there to present outreach information, as well as the other programs that assist us with that particular piece.
Sorry, Chief.
Big piece of that as well is the Hunter Education Program. We have officers involved in the Hunter Education Program and instructing at least the ethics piece of hunter education and compliance with state law.
We've become much more interactive, within our resources, our limited resources with the public. And I think that's helped improve an understanding of the services that we provide, our value to the public at large. It does require an investment, but I think we've seen some payoff there.
We've, again, worked real hard to strengthen partnerships with our stakeholders. We've done three public surveys. The most recent public survey that we did was in 2011. You can see the graph there that depicts the response that we got from hunters and fishers and other watchable wildlife folks, anybody who wanted to fill the survey out, it was available to them. We work hard again to enhance public safety and work with our other law enforcement partners to do that. A big part of that has been the Border Safety Program as well, and we were selected as the Washington State Marine Law Enforcement Boating Safety Program of the Year last year. So our officers have a lot of ground to cover. You've got fish and wildlife officers that provide a law enforcement presence over 1 million acres of agency-owned and protected land, about 5 million acres of DNR land, thousands of acres of private lands and waters. You see the ratios there, and you're going to see it depicted in a couple of other slides further on in the program. We have one fish and wildlife officer to every 47,559 people in the state, one officer to cover about 460 square miles of land, one officer to cover about 302 square miles of water, and one officer to every 12,000 license holders.
And just to add to the ground to cover. Our jurisdictional scope isn't largely understood as it relates to offshore waters. We actually have jurisdiction over registered vessels of our state anywhere in the EEZ. So from the U.S.-Canada border to the U.S.-Mexico border, although I've never patrolled that far south. We do interact with the other West Coast states as it relates to controlling our fishermen, where they don't have jurisdiction outside their 3 miles, but we do.
Commissioner Jennings?
Those are really interesting ratios. Do you have comparable ratios available? Probably not today, but for Idaho, Oregon, Montana, to see how it relates.
I do have those ratios, and you're going to see them in a couple of slides. That's good. Thank you for the question.
So Washington is, of course, the 20th largest state in the U.S., 39 counties, encompassing about 66,000 square miles. We do have over 8,000 lakes, over 40,000 miles of rivers and streams, a total shoreline that measures over 3,000 miles. That, of course, includes the Strait of Juan de Fuca and the Puget Sound. And D.C. and I will come back to this, but it's primarily when we talk about some of the demographics from the other states as well. So that's just a growth chart of Washington's population from 1994 to 2012. You're going to see this also depicted a little later on in another graph, but you see the trend line certainly going up. We've gone from a 5 million population at the time of agency merger in 1994 to a state population of about 1.5 million additional residents. So since the time of merger, the number of fish and wildlife police officers staffing levels have decreased nearly 20%, while the state's population has grown by slightly a higher rate. So the line that you see, the solid line, is officers. The line that you see going up with the black dots on it is the state population. Probably not the intersect that we all would like to see, not necessarily the intersect that all of our public would like to see, but that's what it is. So we did have an IACP, International Association of Chiefs of Police staffing study. I'm sorry, Director, any other question?
Director Anderson.
Thanks. Chief, prior to merger, the fisheries enforcement officers, the wildlife enforcement officers, did they have enforcement authority over both codes? Did fisheries have officers have enforcement over wildlife code and vice versa?
The short answer is yes. As far as how much they were engaged in both of those activities across agencies, they were pretty, I'll let Mike speak to it, but they were pretty much engaged with their specific title and their specific WACs. So former Department of Wildlife, former Department of Game officers focused primarily on Title 77 and WAC 232, where former Department of Fisheries focused primarily on Title 75, which was the fisheries code, and WAC 220, which was those administrative codes. I believe the deputy chief will tell you as well that I think he was hired under boating safety funds at that time, and we did have officers in former Department of Fisheries that were hired under boater safety funds. That was a part of their role. And over the years, we've had duties where it was not just boating safety duties, but it was also vessel registration duties and different emphasis on ensuring that vessels were registered and titled, because there was a revenue, actually a revenue enhancement piece to that.
I was, Director Anderson, I was one of three officers hired under boater registration dollars, and so my understanding is the Department of Game at the time didn't receive funding for that particular activity directly, and so we had more of a focus in that area than that department did. In terms of to build on what the chief stated with respect to where officers focus their time, probably one of the best examples I can think of is something like the my first station was Forks, so when the salmon were in the Salduck River, I was there. When they left, I left. And then the steelhead showed up, the Department of Game was there. And so while there was overlap and we had authority to enforce each other's codes, there was a lot of focus with each other's respective codes.
Can I just ask, I'm sorry, I don't want to prolong this too much. So when you were an officer for the Department of Fisheries, did you actively work hunting seasons? Did you ever help?
I made some cases, but I think saying that I was actively involved probably would be misleading. I made some Darrinell cases, but I didn't plan for opening day. I didn't plan for coverage throughout the deer and elk season.
That may have been because you were tired from covering Nia Bay here in the halibut fishery.
Yes, sir.
So we did have a staffing study done by the International Association of Chiefs of Police back in 2008, and I'll just jump to the bottom line there, which based upon our workload indicators and the data that we had, that they looked at both quantitative and qualitative data, they came to the conclusion that we essentially needed to double the size of our officer numbers based upon existing workload. So getting back to Commissioner Jennings' question, this graph depicts those officer ratios, and again it's just the ratio of officer to state population. So you'll see that we have one officer for every about almost 67,000 citizens. State Patrol has one trooper for every 7,000 citizens. Texas Fish and Game, one officer for every 57,000 citizens, and you can read it as you go down through. We kind of highlighted the Florida one because when you look at our demographics within the state and the demographics of Florida, and the IACP study did the same thing because they tried to compare apples to apples in most fashions. Florida, obviously, their officer to population ratio is much better. One officer to every 25,000 residents. But you look at our other neighboring states, Oregon, Idaho, although they got a pretty good ratio in Idaho, one officer for every 19,000 residents. They certainly don't have the state population that we have, but this is what the ratios are.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The first slide showed staff per citizen at 47,000. This shows 66,000. What did you number did you change to?
I'll have to get back with you on that because I knew the answer to that last night when we were through these. And because I know that there's a difference there. So let me get back to you.
Chief, I can
answer that. I got Garrett there. Okay.
The first table that showed 1 to 47, that included all of our commission staff from the chief on down to the officers. Because we wanted to compare like
That's right.
Figures between the states, and the information we have from the states was the first-line officers, non-supervisory positions. So this includes just our officer positions. The other one includes all of our commission positions.
Okay.
Thank you, Garrett. And that's the same ratio going all the way through the states. That's all we pulled out from WSP. That's just their troopers. It's not the rest of their sergeants and lieutenants and captains and everything else.
Did you have a follow-up?
No. I was going to say, it looks like we need to share some more with the Washington State Patrol.
Oh, they got those transportation funds, you know.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask on this graph that was up there, if the officers per citizen, if we change that to officers, say, per license buyer, would those ratios change much?
They would change. They would change. We haven't done that. So you saw the slide that I showed before on just our state numbers to license holders. But we didn't do that comparison across these states where we looked at officers compared to license holders.
Thank you.
So when you look at our program, staffing history is what this graph depicts, what this chart depicts, and going back from the time of merger to what is proposed in the 13-15 biennium, you'll see a couple of things. At merger, there were, and this is total positions, so that includes our commissioned officers, our non-commissioned officers, and hunter education. So we didn't have hunter education back at the time of merger, and we had 189 funded FTEs. And then from the time of merger, 93-95 to the 97-99 period, you'll see a drop of 40 funded enforcement positions, and again, that's all positions. That reduction was primarily because of general fund shortfalls, because of a large wildlife fund shortfall as well, and we lost $1.5 million of BPA funding during that time period.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Duvia.
Yeah, explain to me why we go down in commissioned people from 175 to 143, but the non-commissioned goes from 14 to 21.
I'm going to get there.
Okay.
I'll promise I'll answer that. During the 99-01 to the 01-03 biennium, there were 30 positions that were reinstated or added. Some of those positions that were lost in that earlier reduction, because we had a fairly large RIF from BPA, like I said earlier, from BPA dollars and general fund dollars, they were again funded. We added 8 positions from dangerous wildlife allocation, 8 FTEs there. We received 3 FTEs from a Department of Justice COPS grant that we had applied for, and then the Hunter Education Unit was moved into the enforcement program as well. Since the 01-03 biennium to the 05-07 biennium, 21 funded positions were reduced. We lost our federal DOJ money. That COPS, Universal COPS Hiring Grant program went away. We had a number of senior officers that retired, and we lost general fund dollars there, and so those positions became vacant and eliminated. And then we moved to 11-13, and 11-13 And even part of 09-11, you can see, like Commissioner Duvia pointed out, you see some adds to the non-commissioned side. And you actually see some adds to the commission side as well. So for 11-13, we picked up three additional positions from dedicated funding, ALEA grant funding. So one detective and two officer positions. And of course, 11-13, as you know, is the current biennium that we're in. Puget Sound Crab endorsement. We picked up a detective position and 2.5 officer positions. From Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead endorsement, we picked up three additional funded positions. One sergeant in Region 5, two officers, one in Region 2, one in Region 5 as well. There was one additional officer that was increased in 11-13 and two additional officers that were increased in the prior biennium. And then 11-13, we picked up two officer positions in with Discover Pass. However, we only filled one officer position there because Discover Pass revenue is about 50% down right now. The increases to the non-commissioned staff, Commissioner Duvia, has been primarily because of indirect dollars that now come into the program that have not come into the program in the past. So we added an administrative regulation analyst, we added a records analyst, we added an office assistant. They're all charged to indirect dollars. And there's 3/4 of an FTE that comes from Pittman Robertson, the Hunter Ed program.
Do you have the option to take those indirect dollars and make an officer or a non-commissioned person? Is that the department's choice? Or are they just restricted?
Yes and no. The indirect dollars that come into the program are based upon the indirect formula that we present to the federal government on most of our matching funds that we receive there. And we have to use that allocation formula. So we pick specific FTEs based upon their duties as it relates to administrative support functions. And so line officers don't provide those administrative staff support functions. So saying that, are we able to leverage the money that we were funding some of those positions for in the past and add enforcement officer positions? Yes, we can. So with some leveraging of money and fund shifts, you see that actually in the numbers that we have increased this biennium. Good question. So you've seen how we're broken out organizationally within headquarters. We have our budget records section, our professional standards section or unit, fleet management, our legal services, where we have our rules coordinator. And we have two attorneys there within the legal services side, our recruitment and training side of the house, and then, of course, field operations. So as the earlier graph depicted, we're at 172.3 funded FTEs at this particular time. 143.5 of those are commissioned staff. About 105 of the 143 are officer positions. There's 22 sergeants, 3 lieutenants, I have 6 captains, the deputy chief, and myself. We have 4 dispatchers, 7.5 FTEs in the hunter education staff, 3 folks that do our fleet maintenance. They equip all of our vehicles, they equip all of our vessels, they repair vessels, and we have 2 support positions that do our property and evidence collection and disbursement.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief, I just have one question because I truly don't know the answer, and I get asked by the public all the time. And maybe it's just because of where I live, I don't know. But if a citizen wants to reach one of your enforcement officers, unless something's changed, they have to call the Highway Patrol. So help me to understand that, and then your four dispatchers. Does the Highway Patrol then call your dispatchers, or help me understand it?
So that's another presentation that we'd really like to make to you somewhere down the road, or maybe we just do it within the advisory committee. But we have our officers utilize essentially three separate systems, radio systems. So our officers, as a primary radio system, use the DNR system for operating channels, operating frequencies. But our emergency dispatch has been, for a number of years, been provided by State Patrol, over 50 years, by contract. I don't want to get too much in the weeds here.
Oh, let me add something. This goes pre-commission involvement. I think that system needs to be revisited.
So let me come back and talk, if you desire that, I'll present that whole piece out on what we're doing with our dispatch system, what we're doing with radio over internet on the DNR system, what we have done with the State Patrol system in regards to reducing costs there, because we used to, just real short, we used to expend about $1.5 million a biennium to WSP to provide radio communication, and right now we're expending about less than $500,000 to them. And then obviously, right back to Commissioner Duvia's question again, that provides available monies then to be able to fund officer positions and or dispatch positions to provide the public greater service.
Commissioner Carpenter, what you're after, I believe, is how can the public interact with us quickly if they need us, right?
Quickly being the operative word.
Right. Okay, we'll cover that as well.
Okay, thank you.
So we have we'll get to that here towards the end, but obviously anybody can call if it's an emergency, they can call 911 and they'll either get a county dispatch center or they'll get the State Patrol, depending on where they're at. They're on a state highway, they're going to probably get the State Patrol. If they're anywhere else, it'll go to a county dispatch center. And that message gets relayed to our officers. Oftentimes, it will come to our dispatch center. Sometimes, it goes directly to our officers by dispatch. But again, we'll be happy to present that.
Thank you for that.
So our 11-13 budget, and again, of course, you know, everything is driven by budget. FTEs is driven by budget, but there's just a couple things here that I'd like to point out. And three bienniums ago, on the general fund side, our general fund apportionment for the law enforcement program was 51%, and now it's 24%. And yet you've noticed that still our officer numbers are increasing. Our state wildlife account dollars, that portion of our budget used to be about 43-44%, now it's higher. So we're receiving additional wildlife fund dollars into our budget that we hadn't been receiving before. The federal fund piece, part of that is PR dollars for Hunter Ed, but a big portion, a fairly substantial portion of that is our NOAA OLE Joint Enforcement Agreement contract with NOAA. That's federal funds. Private local funds, that's our Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Reward account and a couple of other local accounts there. Quite a big piece on ALEA. You see over $1 million there,
$685,000 was added to that budget during this biennium, 11-13, for those additional officers. And then that big fund shift under the recreational resources account of almost $3 million this last fiscal year, that was put into our budget. They took that amount of money out of our general fund, replaced it with RRA money, and that's the current state. That's the current look at where our budget and fund sources are. Really no different, or not much different, I'm going to guess, than any of the other programs. And when you have the other programs come and present on this particular topic, you're going to see this. Not different than your local businesses as well. 75% of our costs go just to personnel costs of our budget, 25% about with operation costs. So we'll just slide through these fairly quickly. You're all familiar with the challenges that the agency faces as it relates to different activities in regards to the natural resource laws that we enforce. Poaching and spree killing is one. Protecting just a growing number of ESA-listed species. And certainly the number of ESA-listed species in Washington State has doubled since 1994. We have over 47 fish and wildlife species that are listed by us, by our agency, as protected, and 43 that are federally listed.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Chief, do you have a breakdown of how much... what amount of time an officer spends on poachers, checking licenses, dangerous calls, predator contacts, that kind of thing? Is there, you have some kind of a time study, I'm sure, and the officers submit what they've been doing. So is there any kind of a... shows that 30% of their time is doing this and 25%.
We do. I didn't include that in this presentation, but we have that, and I'd be happy to furnish that to you.
Is there any part of their activities? I know we're working on like conflict to move part of their function to another area to alleviate and make the fewer officers we got do more what we want them to do. Is there anything else in that daily routine or weekly routine structure that where we could look for making those officers reach more priority type things?
I have a slide on that and on that question, but it's going to be, again, to continue to try to reduce administrative time. So utilizing whatever tools we can use, whether it's technology tools or whatever, to reduce administrative time for officers, provide more field time.
Be real interesting. If we had a blank checkbook, we could fix your problem in a heartbeat, but I think it looks like our checkbook is not even present. So I think if we can figure out ways to redelegate things and reprioritize, we might be able to solve some of the outcome of our problem here.
I was just going to add something to that conversation, Commissioner Duvia. You also have to link our activities to fund source. You know, the general fund has declined. We've had to go looking for other fund sources to plug the hole. And to deal with specific problems as well. One good example is the problem that we believe we're having with a decline in gooey duck populations that we believe are related to poaching. And you know, the director's office backed us up in a big way in making the argument that we needed some additional resources. And so there comes. Long gone are the days where you flip a coin and heads you turn left and right you turn, or tails you turn right coming out of your driveway in the morning. Our officers are directed much more than they used to be. And with these special accounts, the accountability has gone up. So we're going to need to demonstrate to DNR and to the legislature that we took that $500,000 in ALEA funds and we spent it where they intended us to spend it. So that takes, yeah, when you're in a pay-to-play right, scenario, some other things become less of a priority. So we're thinking about those kinds of things all the time. And I just want to spend just a couple of seconds on the efficiency piece. The chief has done a great job. Sounds like I'm really kissing up here, but I'm not. The chief has done a lot in terms of enhancing our ability to get more done with less through technology. And we use that in the patrol mode as well. We don't need to hide in the bushes for days on end in order to catch a bad guy these days. I can do that from my desk practically with the technology that we have these days. So we do have a request in for several drones. My understanding is Seattle PD isn't real thrilled about it. I'm kidding.
Well, just wanted to wake us up, I think.
That was actually a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Well, I'm a firm believer that we need more enforcement people, but knowing that that's not going to come out of the budget, we have to go to work and we get you to spend more time on poachers. So either we got to free up time, which you currently have, and then we could also look at, okay, is there other FTEs in other areas that we can, when they retire, move, or whatever else, we reallocate. But I think so. The solution is going to come from within, not from more money, I think. That's the way I see it at this point in our budget.
I just want to add that I'm always afraid to take weekends off, because when I come back to the office, the chief has reshuffled the deck because he's constantly looking at how to redeploy our resources to be more effective and efficient. But we can definitely provide more information with respect to what we're doing today.
It's always a good management practice to keep one less chair than the number of managers. That keeps them moving pretty fast.
So we obviously have a number of overfished species that we have issues on, ever-changing environment and climate with commercial fisheries, large-scale trafficking of fish and wildlife. Well, certainly not just a state issue, but a multi-state issue. Ensuring that we meet all of our mandates as it relates to the feds for sanitary shellfish, and because we want to ensure that the state is able to ship shellfish products is a huge economic piece to our state government. That's a big piece as well. Invasive species, obviously, another huge piece. I don't think we're keeping up with our preventative measures within Washington, similarly to what's being done in Idaho, Oregon, California, Nevada, our neighboring states, where they have much more resources dedicated to that particular area. But we do what we can. Protect our lands as well. Whatever we can do there is, again, just one of our challenges. And I know we're running short on time. So in summary, we are in an upward trend. We've had, like the deputy chief said, good support from the director's office. We've had some new fund source come in to the program. It's nice to see an upward trend, particularly in very tough budget times. You didn't see over those last three or four bienniums large reductions in enforcement officer numbers. So those are all good things. We're trying to do wherever we can, just like Commissioner Doobie has said, in reducing our officer administrative time and keeping the technology piece at the forefront, and working with process improvement wherever we can to improve our processes and assist with officer time in the field. So we're going to continue to explore any way that we can to leverage our available fund balances and any new fund
that might come into the program to enhance the officer staffing numbers.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair, and Chief and Deputy Chief. Very informative, very well done. I was personally pleased to see that the Columbia River Salmon Stamp endorsement is provided for three officers. It was designed to do that, and I'm pleased that it's followed up. I do have a question that I was curious, having both worn a federal hat and a state hat. Why does Washington's enforcement have federal jurisdiction 3 to 200 when other states don't? I mean, it's good. Why?
Commissioner Schmidt, we have, you mean state authority?
Yes. No, yes, state authority in the federal zone, the 3 to 200.
The Madison-Stevens Fishery Conservation Act, I got that right, does have a provision in it, an authority provision that extends that authority to all states that I know to enforce against vessels registered under the laws of their state anywhere in the EEZ along their coastline. So, for instance, I couldn't touch a vessel from Virginia that decided to fish scallops under state law outside our 3 miles. But we have some constraints with respect to our own fleet, and I could reach that person. I could reach that person if he was outside Oregon's territorial sea. And in fact, our director is involved in tri-state shellfish crab management discussions where the three states have agreed to control their fishers fishing off of each other's shores. Now, in that particular example, Madison actually gives each state jurisdiction over anybody outside their 3 miles as it relates to crab. That's an exception. But generally speaking, federal law allows us to regulate our fishermen outside 3 miles.
Good. Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask about two things and how those might affect your staffing levels or budget and so forth. And that's the, I guess, the change in policy that NOAA put forward, at least it was in the paper and so forth here a year or two ago, about how they enforce. They used to coordinate with you guys all the time, and they were thinking about restructuring their own enforcement to carry out, I think, a broader array of things. And the transfer of game damage to wildlife program, are either one of those giving you more funding or ability to get more officers in the field?
So we'll start with the NOAA contract. We actually received less money this last federal fiscal year in the NOAA contract than we had the previous year. The deputy chief's very engaged with that particular process, as well as with the allocation formula that's used for all of the JEA, the joint enforcement agreements with the multiple states across the U.S. Whether or not that gets changed or there's enhancements to that particular formula, I think that's still open for discussion. So there may be a possibility of some additional federal funds under that particular contract coming in. So yes, that would give another opportunity, should that increase, to leverage some resources there. The other piece that you referred to as it relates to deer and elk damage, some of the wildlife conflict pieces, that's a presentation that Assistant Director Pamplin and I will come before the commission in, I believe, March or April.
I see.
And present that to you. And we'll go through where we're at with the transition process, describe how all that will work and what the possibilities might be in regards to leveraging additional resources there.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a question on your metrics, because my experience with the enforcement program is it is very data intensely managed, so that you can account for officer time and the various ways in which officers are making cases and spending their time efficiently. And I noticed during your presentation, you talked about customer satisfaction levels very high, which is impressive. Do you have other metrics that you've been thinking about using to determine the effect of inadequate staffing numbers on crime rates, natural resource crime rates, compliance rates? So I started listing some possible ways to measure the harm done to natural resources caused or directly related to insufficient officer or enforcement presence. Just the way in which the public might be more inclined to violate if they don't feel that they're going to get caught, and the effect of that on natural resources. So, for example, are you keeping data on, say, the trends in terms of spree killings, trends in terms of poaching, percent harvest, trends in terms of compliance rates with various fisheries or wildlife harvest rates, trends in terms of observed presence of officers? You know, I see occasionally people talking about how they've fished for 10, 20 years and they've never seen an officer. Is there a way that we can measure this so that we can make a stronger case that insufficient officer numbers is actually having an effect?
So thank you for that question, Madam Chair. I believe we can get at some of those elements with existing data that we have. We can do some trend analysis with some of the existing data. Even a couple of those points that you mentioned in regards to trends and public perceptions, we have some of those questions that we asked in our citizen surveys. Mm-hmm. So we could give you additional information there from that. There are a couple of nationwide studies that Responsive Management has done. They've done a fairly recent one on officer present level, so we can certainly provide that to you as well. It's data from another state, but it is certainly relevant. We've talked with Responsive Management about potentially doing that type of survey here within Washington as well, so we could get at some of those measurements. But we haven't gone forward. I mean, obviously, it costs money to do that. And but we haven't gone forward with the contract with them yet. But I think that would be a very good group to do that with.
Because in order to get society to spend serious money on this, and what we would be talking about if we wanted to get to the adequate staffing levels that the staffing study recommended would be millions of additional dollars. Your budget's about $20 million a year, so you need about twice that much to double your officer numbers. That's serious money. And unless we can show that there's a direct effect of inadequate numbers on natural resources that people care about, we'll have a harder time addressing the problem. And so, you know, this is not meant for criticism. It's just trying to offer up some constructive thinking about how do we make that case that we really do need to put more money into this. So
there's and I don't want to belabor the point, but I attended a meeting this last week for the director. I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, but I got an invite from one of the senators because they're interested in putting together a legislative outdoor caucus similar to what has been done in Oregon and a number of other states. And the people that were at the table were a lot of the sportsman groups that we work with right now as an agency, but obviously it's a different forum for them to present concerns and issues before the legislators. And one of the individuals in there made a request to one of the senators about enforcement officers, enforcement presence. And his particular suggestion was, Senator, can you do something similar with DFW enforcement that you do with state parks? And that is, you know, when we... Not so much cut the funding piece, but when you buy a Discover Pass or you register a vessel or you register your vehicle, you have an opportunity to make a donation to state parks. And he wanted to have that same availability to make a donation to Fish and Wildlife for additional officer presence. So I'm sure there's lots of different models probably out there, different suggestions. We certainly as an agency have talked about several other different ways to potentially enhance revenue or to be able to do that.
Okay. Deputy Chief.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just... something I forgot to mention, Commissioner Schmidt, we adopt federal regulations under state law to apply in the EEZ, so that's also consistent with what Magnuson allows us to do in terms of regulating our fleet. And the director has the authority to promulgate regulations outside 3 miles. And I just was thinking a little bit, Commissioner Perry, about your question earlier. How we compare officer to citizen ratio, it's going to be, I think when we make the comparison that we did make, officer to citizen versus officer to license holder, it's probably more reflective of the pressure on our law enforcement resources. We have a number of activities we police or that we regulate that are not necessarily tied to licenses. Sanitary shellfish is probably a good example. The chief mentioned federal requirements to patrol unsanitary areas so that our resources aren't embargoed. The USDA requires a specific patrol schedule based on risk that we have to meet, and that's audit, our activity is audited every year. Just as an example, and that's an unfunded, federal mandate. And we conduct marketplace inspections, tracing our seafood back, and we have marketplace regulations also that relate to fair play in commercial industry and consumer protection, to include seafood labeling and branding, boater safety, vandalism on public lands. I mean, all that stuff, search and rescue, response to potentially dangerous wildlife. None of that stuff necessarily ties directly into a license. And so I don't know if that was helpful or not.
I didn't think that through when I asked the question, but I would agree that you guys have responsibility for a whole lot more stuff than that wouldn't necessarily require a license.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
But that's also what helps justify our 36% of our general fund budget. Those other activities.
Great. Thank you so much. And we'll have to think about the other presentations we'd like from enforcement, including the dispatch system approach. Okay. We have a break. Let's come back at 15:15. Thanks.